This is the December 1 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Aaron Curtis of Midco out of Bloomington, Illinois, Sherman Newland with Risk Management Commodities out of Hudsonville, Illinois, and Dan Zwicker of Zwicker Consulting from Waco, Texas. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Do find us online at willag.org.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.
We'll begin as usual with this question. Aaron Curtis, what's on your list for discussion items on the day?
Well, I guess we'll start with probably one of the more interesting markets we've had this week, and that's the soybean market. Continue to see producer reward soybeans here, at least earlier in the week. We have a cash situation that continues to be a little on the weak side, spreads widening out, and futures have been rallying. So I guess what does producer do in this last little break we've had on soybeans the last couple of days? Does that mean we're at least going to limit the upside, or is there still some more upside to come on soybeans? I guess, you know, how does a producer handle that on old crop beans here over the next few weeks?
Sherman Newland of Risk Management Commodities.
Yeah, I mean, it's what do the producers do with these prices at these levels, and you know, what are we going to look at going forward for the next year? There's been some talk about money flow coming out of the commodity markets here lately, going into the higher crude oil market since OPEC made that cut yesterday. So that's something to try and figure out here going forward. So.
And Dan Zwicker of Zwicker Consulting.
Oh, about how the shortness of the dollar, dollar shortage, will impact commodities as we move into 2017. How about that one?
All right. Well, let's start with that one. That sounds kind of fun. What do you think? I thought we had all kinds of dollars hanging around.
Well, so did I. But I guess one of the main reasons or the driving forces of the strength that we've seen in the dollar is that there's a shortage of dollars. Foreign investors that basically have used the dollar to buy assets around the world. So we have all these dollars that have been printed, actually have been invested in all sorts of assets and stock markets and equities throughout the world. And it sounds a little weird, but the only way to increase the supply of dollars is to raise interest rates and to get them to sell those assets to get the dollars back into circulation. Yeah.
So in the mean space, does that mean, and we've had a higher dollar, that there might be more in the way of higher dollars unless the interest rates actually begin to tick up, as the Federal Reserve seems that it may do?
Well, I'm not too sure things apply like they did in the 80s. Actually, I think higher interest rates will probably make the dollar weaker, and then that may make U.S. commodities more attractive in the world.
Let's talk about some other things. One of the ones that hasn't been mentioned very often, but I know that should be taking place, and this is related, Dan, to what you have been discussing, is the rebalancing of funds. That usually happens in the month of November. Sherman Newland, have we had any indication that the funds will come in or out of the commodities, in particular the agricultural commodities?
They've been coming back into the bean market, that's for sure. They've been adding length to that. It looks like, you know, it's kind of maybe putting in a little bit of a top, and that's why I said with money flow, looked like maybe the funds are kind of coming out of that a little bit and going into some of the other markets. I mean, there was a major bank here the other day that, you know, kind of reiterated that maybe commodities were a buy for a change, that they haven't had been for the last 4 years, and the most compelling market out there at the time has been the bean market. So it looks like, at least for a portion of it, they have come back into some of the commodities, and crude oil in particular here lately.
Speaking of the bean market, Sherman, have you managed to take advantage of the higher prices of recent? And have you been talking to your producers about doing the same?
Yes, 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 absolutely. Yeah, we made some sales up here the other day when we were close to the highs, actually, on old crop, and we were reiterating and trying to reach out to everybody to make some sales on new crop beans. We did that in the cash market. We're probably at least a little over 10% sold cash-wise, at least I am personally on my own farm, above $10 on this November contract. So I think you have to take a look at that right now. I mean, we're above $10 on old and new. We're at profitable levels. So it's one thing I think guys at least have got to get something done up in through here. So
why do you say you have to take advantage of it? What is it from your farmer side that says, when I do these numbers, it's important?
Because profit is really low this coming year. Everybody right now this time of year is, you know, looking at their yields, looking at their budgets. You know, they're talking with their landlords. They're trying to figure out how they can stay in business for next year and hopefully the year after and the year after that. So right now, beans are offering you some sales up here at a profitable level. If you can't make money, you know, with $10 plus beans, then you need to relook at some things. But, you know, also corn is not at a very profitable level. So at least, you know, make some sales up here where you're locking something in. And if you're wrong and the market continues to go up, you know, you can re-own it with some cheap call options. But if the market would go up, hopefully it would start to pull the corn market up higher along with it.
Aaron Curtis, did producers reward this marketplace in the same way that Sherman tells you you're sitting in an elevator there at Midco in Bloomington?
Yeah, they have been pretty active here up until probably Tuesday. I mean, last Friday, even on a short day, and Monday morning when we snuck January beans back over 1050, yeah, it was quite a bit of bean ownership changed hands from the producer to the commercial. So we had quite a bit of activity, and we've seen basis react somewhat negatively, at least in the early part of the week. Now we've slowed that down drastically here now that the market turned back lower come Tuesday afternoon into Wednesday and even again today here with some lower futures. So it kind of feast or famine, but you know, our estimates, at least from the elevators that we deal with, they feel like they're probably 60-65% bought on old crop beans here. So, you know, quite a bit of beans have changed hands here over the last probably some of that, large share of that, even in the last couple weeks, as this bean rally continued to kind of defy expectations, you know, based on what the current fundamental situation is. So, yeah, producer continues to reward beans in somewhat fashion that continues to finance their lack of interest in the corn market because, boy, there's just not a lot of corn moving out here, Todd.
You mentioned that basis had tightened up, I think, by the end of this week. Is that right? It had loosened up earlier in the week. Is it coming back in with the lower prices now?
Well, we saw the CIF values perk back up here a little bit. Now, they're awful cheap, right? So a little bit of perkness doesn't go a long way. But they have stabilized a little bit here late this week. Saw CIF bean values up just a touch here today. And that, you know, speaks a little bit to the fact that, you know, the producers kind of stayed out of this here, you know, selling game here the last couple days. So that's allowed things to recover a little. Processor values, basis values really haven't changed much after they weakened up here a little bit earlier in the week, Todd.
Dan, I want you to take a two-prong approach to this, both old and new crop for the soybeans, because I think those charts may look slightly different to you when you view them. First, can you talk about the lead option chart for soybeans and where you see that technically, and then what that new crop November bean chart might look like?
Yeah, let me see here. I can get pulled up here. For the most part, soybeans have only retraced, or they have even completed really a 38% retracement off of their October low or late September low, whatever one you want to use. There's only a couple pennies difference. Lead futures, the 38% retracement level comes in at like 10.16, which correlates pretty well with the late October high about 10.20. So that late October high, at least on the lead futures contract anyway, is offering support. I think tomorrow, Friday, and then maybe early next week could be important. If the market is able to kind of hold together here tomorrow and maybe early next week, I think all of the momentum indicators then will begin to turn upward, and soybeans could very well be in positioned for another leg higher as we go on into the month of January. As far as November soybeans, depending upon which chart you look at, I can be pretty friendly new crop soybeans also. They have not done much of a retracement after, you know, hitting here at 1043, I guess, back on November 28th. They've just retraced a little bit. So I think overall, the soybeans are clearly in an uptrend, and but in the near term, it's not uncommon to have seasonal weakness during the first week of December. So if we can get through the end of next week without any major technical damage, I think soybeans will be in position to take another leg up to the upside as we go on into January.
Aaron Curtis, can you make a fundamental picture that would support a higher move in soybeans?
There's at least on the balance sheet, there's not much. I know, you know, we got really good demand for soybeans, but that's a pretty known fact at this point. We continue to see, you know, decent export sales, and crush continues to be good, but it has to be just because we have so much beans we got to continue to work through. So 480 carry out, at least on the surface, doesn't argue that soybeans need to go a lot higher. We've seen certain days where we kind of chase in the veg oil markets in Asia, which is a, you know, quite a bit tighter situation than what we're dealing here domestically. But, you know, to really kind of continue to push higher, at least our feeling is we're going to have to need, you know, some sort of hiccup probably in South American weather, because boy, the Brazil crop looks pretty good at this point, and we're going to have some early harvest coming here later this month, and quite a few beans coming off earlier than expected here into January. So that probably makes us a little concerned about the export program moving forward. At this point, China had kind of been kind of holding off on some January purchases, trying to wait to see exactly how fast forward that Brazil crop's going to be. And, you know, they're starting to dip their water a little more into Brazilian soybean purchases at this point, even for that January time frame. So a little bit of concern about, you know, some export demand here once we get past the first of the year. But, you know, you look at the world situation, at least domestic situation, without some sort of, you know, production hiccup, you know, it's hard to argue for another big leg higher. But of course, the argument is that we got to 1050 on January beans on a 480 carryout. So, you know, obviously in the bean market, anything's possible, Todd.
Are we looking, when we look domestically at that 480, do you think, at the right number, or do we need to look at the global number as it relates to our exports? The big gorilla in that room, of course, China, which eats up much of the supply of soybeans, not only from the United States, but from the two South American producers, actually three, Paraguay, along with Brazil and Argentina.
Yeah, I think you make a good point there. I think it's more a little more focused on the world market. Obviously, there's been some focus on what's been going on Asia on the veg oil side. So it's more than just what we're dealing with here domestically. That's obviously been a little more concerning for what we're seeing on basis and spreads, you know, with the cash market kind of reflecting more this burdensome domestic situation, whereas the futures been focusing on, you know, maybe some outside worldly global things moving forward. So, you know, it's something you got to keep to keep an eye on, more than just the domestic situation. But, you know, if we produce another 100 plus million metric ton crop in Brazil and another good crop in Argentina, then that world situation starts to get a little more heavy too. But I think you looked at the 10-year baseline projections there, the USDA put out on Tuesday, and you can see they expect that Chinese import demand to continue to grow over the next 10 years. So it's it's going to be a good demand story here as we move forward on soybeans. You know, just the last couple of years with record yields finally caught up to the balance sheet a little bit, Todd, at least domestically.
And on top of that, Sherman Newland, U.S. EPA, released its renewable fuel standard, and that looks like it may put a push into the advanced biofuel sector, especially for Biofuels made from vegetable oils, soybean oil in particular, for soy diesel, corn oil, I suppose, could be used as well. Is there really some fundamentals here that we're not taking into full account that might give us more of an upside potential in the soybean market than what we see when we think about that 480 million bushel carryout that USDA currently has on the balance sheet?
Yeah, potentially, Todd. I mean, it definitely helps. I mean, with them increasing that, the mandate with that, along with the, you've got a tight palm oil market too, and that's been kind of, pushing the bean markets up in the overnights a lot, and I think the funds have been kind of chasing this market here a little bit. So it does help. Is it enough to force us to another leg higher? I kind of agree with Aaron on that standpoint. I don't think it's enough there to make a huge difference. I mean, but it does help.
Dan, what do you think?
Well, where I'm sitting at on the grid, the weather pattern has definitely shifted from the last 3 years. The last 3 years down here in Waco, Texas, we have had saturated soils through basically the fall months, October, November, December. I had worries whether or not my septic tank was going to work during the holidays when I had family and guests around. And yes, we're not totally dry. It sprinkles once in a while. But those 5-inch rainfall patterns and that heavy rainfall pattern that we've experienced for about 3 years running has definitely changed. And I think you can pretty well say that the El Nino weather pattern is gone. We're in a La Nina pattern, and now we're going to start seeing more dryness in the southern Corn Belt. And you're already seeing the extreme dryness in the southeastern growing region. And over the years, I've observed that droughts generally develop coming out of the southeast, and that'll be something to watch as we go forward here over the next few months, whether or not that big dry area in the southeast, if that expands north and west and moves into the eastern Corn Belt, you've got a different ball game than you have over the last several years here in the United States.
On that note, on Thursday, Mike Tenora during the closing market report talked about Argentina just a bit. Some of the southern parts of Brazil both have been a little dry. There has been some concern on the part of the agricultural meteorologists all week long that have joined us as it relates to Argentina, in particular, I think, for their corn production areas and mostly for their early corn crop. Will that work its way into the marketplace, do you think, Aaron Curtis? And have you heard that at all yet?
Well, I think, a little bit drier trend here this week. Still expecting, a little bit of moisture next week. So obviously, Brazil, like I mentioned, off to a good start. I think we talked about it a little bit last week, Todd, where, the market seemed to be, somewhat caught off guard last year with the dry weather in Brazil and the wet weather in Argentina. We went through the whole winter and early spring with nothing to trade on. The market bored everybody to death with these tight ranges. And then all of a sudden the weather popped up in South America and we're kind of off to the races, especially on these soybeans. And then corn got into the mix a little bit later with the concerns on the dry weather for the Brazil second crop. So the market's going to be much more sensitive, especially on soybeans here, like we've seen with any changes in that southern Brazil, Argentina crop. So if there's any lingering concerns or if it gets too dry for too long a period of time, I think the market's going to be somewhat volatile, just with the idea that, they don't want to be caught kind of off guard like we seem to be a little bit last year. And, what could that mean to the balance sheet here for extended into next year for, we already know what it meant for the early corn export program out of the U.S. here with Brazil not having as much export of supplies last year. And, does it alter the balance sheet next year? And so here we sit with, decent weather right now, decent early conditions. But, the market's going to be awful sensitive if that changes very quickly.
On top of all of this news, Sherman Newland, we can talk a little bit about the OPEC cut, and I want to put this into context of last year, as Aaron alluded to, one of the weights on the marketplace for the very, very, very low prices of crude oil last winter. That has subsided, and this week, OPEC decided that it would cut its daily barrel supply, and we're hoping for $50 to $60 a barrel oil. Will that make much of a difference for the commodity markets this winter?
We think it should. I mean, eventually, yeah. I mean, it's part of the CRB index. I mean, if it would continue to run, I think, you know, the funds would take a, you know, from that and start buying some more of these other commodities and corn in particular. I think it should help it as much as anything eventually with the ethanol and everything. So we feel like it is going to help out the commodities in general. I mean, with that said, I mean, we're recommending guys probably should be looking at locking in some fuel prices in through here if they haven't already. And then back on what you're talking about on the weather, I mean, I read this morning that from Soy World in South America that it's dry enough in Argentina that it is starting to delay some planting. So I wanted to add that.
All right. Dan Zwicker, can you take a look at the corn market technically for me at this point?
First, I want to say good news on the oil front. My Houston clients are jumping up and down. I hope Saudi Arabia just keeps cutting. Actually, we like to see Donald Trump just tell us not to buy any of that Mideast oil and just use U.S. oil and get the shale oil fields here going again and get everything back working. So it's good news to Texas anyway. OPEC has been strangling the United States for 40 years. And I think they're about ready to strangle themselves. So I think it's good news on that front. When I look at the corn market, again, it's seasonally typical for the corn market to show weakness in late November, first week or so of December. As everybody knows, I was a longtime Farm Bureau employee, and it seemed like every time we headed to Chicago for our annual meeting, prices were going into a nosedive, and that's the case again this year as the Illinois Farm Bureau convention gets underway this weekend. But I think technically where lead futures is right at a 50% retracement of the advance that we had out of our late August low point. This is a spot for corn to kind of make a stand in here. I still think there's probably a few days of consolidation or maybe weakness as we go through next week. Like I said, I kind of want to get through this first 7 to 10 days of December. And I think if we can get through that without any major technical breakdown on the charts, corn, I think, will be in position to resume to the upside as we go on into 2017. I also feel fairly confident that corn is pulling out of a major 8-year cycle low here. And I guess I have big hopes for corn prices as we go on into 2017.
Okay, so I'm going to suggest, Dan, that you're probably the only one, and I don't know whether I want to call you friendly or bullish to both the corn and the soybean markets, that is on the panel that is in that direction. Am I right, Aaron and Sherman, that you two would be more neutral as opposed to friendly or bearish the marketplace?
I think at least on the corn, I guess probably more neutral. I don't think there's a lot of downside here moving forward, but you know, 2.4 billion carryout doesn't argue that prices need to move a lot higher. So I guess we're, you know, kind of in the category where, you know, a year ago where we just kind of trade sideways, kind of waiting for some sort of reason for the funds to cover their shorts here with their short position, you know, just kind of hanging in there. So sitting here looking for reasons, if that's South America weather or something that happens here next spring with lower corn acres or something like that. In the meantime, though, I don't think it's
you know, kind of like last year, we're going to be kind of bored to death here with this thing just kind of edging sideways for the most part.
On the corn side, it's fundamentally, yeah, you kind of look at it and you kind of struggle with that big of a carryout. I mean, I do kind of question the yield that the USDA put out, how they could raise it that much more. I know, of course, I know you can't fight the fact that that's where it is, but I know in southern Illinois, yields were way off from what USDA put the state at. So northern Illinois had to have one heck of a crop. I mean, we were probably 25 bushel off from last year down in southern Illinois. There's actually going to be some insurance claims just because of the low yield. But with all that said, I mean, seasonally, like Dan said, I mean, corn kind of tends to start to come up into this December, January time frame. So I'm kind of looking at that. It looks like, you know, the wheat market may be kind of hopefully going to try and find some sort of low and put in a bottom, which would also help the corn market out. But, you know, farmers aren't selling right now. The basis is tight. I mean, we're 10 under local for cash corn, and that's pretty good, you know, if we're supposed to have such a big crop out there. So I guess I'm neutral to friendly to the corn market, at least in a hopeful stage. beans, I could see going, you know, either way up and through here, depending on the weather and what the funds want to continue to do with this market. If they would want, you know, choose to exit it, then I could see us, you know, falling down some more. But if the market's going to be any good, it should hold, you know, kind of like Dan was saying. I mean, chop around in through here, and then if it's any good, kind of start to move back up. So I'm optimistic. We have some reasons for things to bounce. But as a producer, I think, you know, if we get some higher levels, we need to pick off some of those prices and make some cash sales.
Dan, can you pull up the winter wheat chart for me, whether that's hard or soft red? I don't know which one you would prefer to look at. I assume Chicago.
One that looks like it fell out of bed.
Yeah. So explain that one to me with the rest of your technical look.
Well, I think, you know, wheat, of course, has been in a basically a steady bear market for 1, 2, 3, 4 years. So far, you know, those September lows are holding. We may go down as this December contract kind of expires. We may do a double bottom or something on that. But I think wheat is also in a position to move higher as we go on into 2017. So I guess I'm more inclined to think that we're going to have some. If my cycle work is correct, we're going to have weather problems here in the United States as well as maybe around the world. This is what's going to lift commodity prices higher. I also think the story of 2017 is going to be dollar weakness instead of dollar strength. So I think that's going to help us keep commodity prices moving in the right direction to the upside.
So I suppose if I were to summarize what I've heard for the last 28 minutes or so, from Aaron and from Sherman, they're looking for a reason for the market to rally in some point. From you, Dan, you see the technical picture that gives you a bright spot in the marketplace for those three commodities. However, I know you well enough to know that the technical picture tells you where it might head, but not exactly why it heads there. So the fundamental reasons are still to be put in place, though you have given me some options that make that happen. Is that kind of a good summary of what we heard?
Well, yeah, the only thing missing is those grain merchandisers from the uppercase ABCs and the lowercase ABCs. If they go out and they start telling farmers to sell corn and wheat and soybeans at these levels, then I know I'm dead right, because they're the same ones that got everybody short these $9 beans last winter. So if these grain merchandisers from these commercial grain companies start advising farmers to sell corn, soybeans, and wheat at these levels, then I know I'm going to have a bull market in 2017. Now, if they don't, well, then I probably won't get a bull market in 2017.
Oh, Aaron, it's a good thing you work for a company that begins with an M and not an APS.
There we go. I don't want to be grouped in with those guys, right? But I back to your point, Dan, I don't think that we've seen that. I mean, obviously, there's been a lot of beans moving, but I guess I haven't seen a lot of recommendations out there to sell much corn yet. So we'll see if that changes.
Well, yeah, they got burnt pretty bad this past year. But, you know, every one of them got in the farmer advisory business. And this is what's so funny about it. They all think that they know better than what the farmer is, and they did probably the worst job of anybody at marketing grain. But
right.
But every one of these grain companies are in the advisory business, and the reason they're in the advisory business is to accumulate cash inventory. They want to get that inventory on the books, and then they can trade that into the world market. It's getting harder and harder to get your physical hands on farmer inventory because they've been too greedy over the years. So farmers have built massive grain bins. Actually, the grain bin operations that I've noticed driving through Illinois are better than the elevators anymore that a lot of these big farmers have. So, but that's the thing I want to watch. Since all of the grain companies are in the advisory business now, I always want to find out what they're all advising. And I guess that will be something to watch. So if you pick up that they're starting to advise everybody, give me a call, would you, Aaron?
Yeah, I will. I'll let you know.
All right. Well, let's wrap this one up at this point. I kind of want to get a final word from each of you. Let's start with the farmer in the crew, Sherman Newland, who is with Risk Management Commodities. He's out of Hudsonville, Illinois. Sherm?
Yes. I mean, I'd like to tell the guys to, you know, be proactive in through here. I mean, do your budgets, you know, talk to your landlords, see what you can do about rent. I mean, we got to work together and to make, you know, next year profitable for us and you know, take advantages of some of these prices if we get them and make some decent sales. And if you need to, re-own them with call options. Volatility is really cheap right now, and calls are relatively cheap. So if you make some sales and you're worried, reach out there and get some calls bought.
Aaron Curtis from Midco.
I think Sherman mentioned it earlier, just kind of doing some math, especially on the soybeans. When you talk about some of the yields, the producers were able to see this last fall on soybeans times these prices. It adds up pretty quickly. So continue to use that as kind of a guide here. And we continue to recommend kind of being a scale-up seller on soybeans. And, you know, new crop soybeans are something you got to continue to watch, especially if you're going to see some increased acres next year on your farm. Keep in mind that, you know, you got to take advantage or at least lock in maybe some of that increase that you're going to see with these prices above $10, at least on futures. And, you know, at this point, kind of recommend being a little patient on corn for now.
And Dan Zwicker in Waco, Texas.
Don't have a lot to say from famous Waco, Texas, other than wish everybody happy holidays as they begin to come closer and closer to us. And like I said, I do think 17 will give us some decent marketing opportunities. Don't necessarily know when they'll occur, but I do think that we will see an opportunity somewhere here down the road.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can find us online at willag.org, where you can listen to the whole of our program. Our thanks to our panelists this week, including Aaron Curtis of Midco out of Bloomington, Illinois, Sherman Newland from Risk Management Commodities in Hudsonville, Illinois, and Dan Zwicker of Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.